show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's our home. That's where we live. That's where you go for the access to the chat room, for access to news stories from any given day. That's where you go to participate in all facets of this grand multimedia experiment in independent broadcasting that has been going on for these 10 years now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and my apologies go out first to Dr. Bill and to those of you who tuned in for Dr. Bill until just a matter of moments ago. We were unable to connect to the streamer, but I have what I hope will be a complete recording of Dr. Bill's program that I will put up for Ben Birch to put in the podcast file and the archive file at whiterosesociety.org in short order, because you want to hear this. This is, what's been going on with the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility for the last month or so, and frankly during the entirety of its history, but especially in this last month or so, is nothing short of masterful. This is a deconstruction of the right wing's fond wish to finally have done with representative government in the United States. Frankly, I don't know if there's anybody out there who can do what Dr. Bill is doing right now. And if not letting the right wing take this government apart piece by piece, bone by bone, sinew by sinew, gristle by gristle matters to you, then you want the most recent programs from Dr. Bill. And I found out from Ben Birch that there had been a posting error last week. Now, last week's masterful programs, as well as the week previous weeks, come on, Bob, you're an English major, are up, and I heartily encourage you to go and become well acquainted with what Dr. Bill is talking about, simply because absent doing so, having a fully functioning understanding of the present tactic of trying to debilitate government in its entirety, well, you're not going to have the grasp that you could have. I mean, I've heard lately that there are some progressives out there who are saying, yeah, hell yeah, why not? Let's have a constitutional convention. We can get rid of Citizens United that way. Yeah, funny. Because that's going to happen. But what Dr. Bill's been doing is as clear an understanding of where the right wing wants to go with this whole state called Constitutional Convention, which the framers never intended to be used in the first place. Well, there you go. You're only going to, I mean, there's, I'm not kidding. There's nobody else out there doing this. And, of course, because we are from the, I'm sorry. I was about to say the left, and I can't say the left without laughing. What left? But because we are progressive people, we tend, we don't play checkers while they play chess. We play marbles. And, consequently, there's an entire likelihood that at some point the right wing will get away with it. I mean, they got enough states to call the Constitutional Convention now. They may get away with it. And the left will be sitting there going, oh, when did they say they wanted to do this? Well, that isn't very sporting of them. Goodness me. Will there be breakout sessions? Perhaps we could have an editing session for the Constitution and we could take out that awful three-fifths business. Which would be a good idea. If one was to have a good faith constitutional convention, let's have a 21st century constitution. But do you think that's going to happen? I mean, just in the amount of time that Dr. Bill spent explaining the balanced budget amendment, I sat here shivering. Because essentially they're trying to take modern government back to some sort of almost gold standard-esque approach where you only spend as much as what's coming in. And I know that sounds, well, that's all I can spend. I mean, I can't just write hot checks. You're not a government. Neither am I. But, well, there you go. So do check out today's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility podcast. And make sure you catch up on the ones from last week and the week before, too. Understanding this is critical. I was a little slow on the draw getting into the chat room, but I'm there now. Come on by. It's a lovely time. I tweeted right before showtime that we were going to be able to get on the air. And I hope other people hadn't just run away anyway. So, there you go. Yeah, come on by the chat room. It's free. It's easy. Also, of course, at headonradionetwork.com, and this is a gentle reminder, we try to raise $150 on any given evening. Thanks going out today to subscribers. Grant and Gene's subscriptions rolled in. Thank you very much. That means we only have to look for $135 this evening. Basically 13 and a half people at 10 bucks a piece. We'll sort out the remainders and the gazintas later. But that's what keeps things rolling. And a program note, I have an event that I have to take Ferg to tomorrow evening. So no live program tomorrow night. There will be a rerun probably of this here very program. Just so you'll know. So we're looking for $135. There won't be any program and no fundraising tomorrow, so if we could actually get it up to $185 tonight, that would be great, and we'd stay on track for the month of May. Now, everybody knows that this is the beginning of the week. It is the first full week of May. Yeah, that means something, the beginning of the week.
Yes, indeed, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Get your program. This is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much. Yes, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you can step inside this virtual canvas and bear witness to Morans of all stripes. Right-wing Morans, pig-licking Morans, booger-vore Morans. The entire range of the booger sphere is behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Yes, indeed. Religious Morans, judicial Morans, Morans of all stripe, mean Morans, goofy Morans, insane Morans, Morans one and all. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, mercy. It's true. It is true. It's true. I thought we had a pretty good handle on where to start with the Moranity this evening. And then they ran right out of the woodwork. I mean, all over the place. Just scurrying around. I guess we kind of got to start at the Supreme Court today.
in which the morans, the ones we specifically refer to as the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, led by the fearless Anthony Kennedy, established religion in this country. Yes, indeed. Certainly did. A majority of the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, because that's the way so many of them break out these days, a majority of the Supreme Court declared that Greece, New York's prayer opening its city council meetings were perfectly constitutional. You betcha they are. And they're constitutional because the religious zealots sitting on the court say so. Nothing, yeah. My buddy Paul provided me the one-liner of the evening. It was a beautiful thing. Noting today's Supreme Court ruling, my buddy Paul pointed out that in gutting the Establishment Clause today, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was forced to make the sign of the cross at gunpoint by Fat Tony Scalia. It's about the size of it. Now, the Supreme Court ruled And here's where the Moran part comes in. I just hate to mention who the nominee is. No, they jumped through a bunch of hoops and pointed, Anthony Kennedy, emulating his hero Fat Tony Scalia, upended one of his own decisions from a previous decade in holding that Greece, New York, could hold its, have prayers there on the front end of its city council meetings because they were largely meaningless and ceremonial. Mm-hmm. And that anybody who wanted to was free to get up and leave during the praying. And they even specifically acknowledged the fact that the prayers in front of the Greece, New York town council were admittedly, overtly, really, really sectarian. You remember how our buddy, disgraced Navy chaplain, Gordon Klingon Chappie Schmidt, he disgraced himself and got himself thrown out of the chaplaincy in the United States Navy by insisting that no matter who he was praying before, whether there were Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Jains, Shinto, animists, Wiccans, whatever, that he was going to pray in Jesus' name. Well, that's the way they pray in Greece, New York. Father God, Jesus Christ, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Duck, all of that. And the court said, yeah, well, that's all right. That's okay, because anybody that doesn't like it can leave. And they distinguished the case from a case involving school prayer at a graduation ceremony by saying that, well, you know, you got young people there. Really? The Supreme Court was saying 10 or so years ago that it would be a lousy thing to do to a child's mind? With which I kind of agree. But no, they said, you know, I mean, it's a town council meeting, and you're free to leave if you don't like it. Oddly enough, that free to leave if you don't like it has never worked before. Free to leave if you don't like it means that you have to stand up and leave the room and subject yourself to the scorn of the believers. But that's exactly what the Supreme Court ruled today in its Greece, New York case. Now, there are a couple of different ways to approach this. If a sectarian prayer is A-OK in Greece, New York, and by definition, it means it's going to be okay all over the South. I imagine they'll be, I mean, as soon as you get south of the Mason-Dixie line, I imagine they're going to start passing snakes around in city council meetings and Here, you want to swig of this strychnine? Testify! Right. But if sectarian prayers are okay, and if it's not a violation of the Establishment Clause, then we need to start having some various priests and clerics of other religions step up and ask to lead the invocation at the beginning of town council meetings. Specifically, I would suggest Rome, or not Rome, Greece, New York. There's a Rome, New York, too, but this is Greece. Greece is the word. Have you heard? No, we need a Hindu priest to come up and offer an invocation, specifically asking the blessings of Krishna and Vishnu and Shiva and Ganesh. And you know what? We could probably take up, because the Hindu pantheon is rather broad, we could probably take up the better part of the town council's meetings by having making sure the Hindu priest listed off all the gods, demigods, godlings, and godlets of the Hindu pantheon to make sure that they were all looking auspiciously upon the proceedings of the town council of Greece, New York. And you know what? Under today's ruling, I don't think the town council gets to pull a King Arthur from Monty Python and the Holy Grail and look at him and say, skip a bit, brother. Mm-mm. So we need a Hindu. We need a Jain. It's going to be especially fun when a Muslim comes in to insist upon the right to lead the Rome, New York Town Council prayer. A little question. How is this not a sort of Christianized version of Sharia law? Well, says the Supreme Court, the founding fathers, they had prayers in front of congressional sessions. That's what it is. So it's traditional. It's tradition. Cue up the Fiddler on the Roof soundtrack, would you there? Yeah, thanks, Ruth. Yeah, no. So we're going to need some praying to Allah and some praying to all the Hindu pantheon. We're going to need some Shinto prayers. I personally am looking forward to the observation of the new corn ceremony honoring the Mexica god Xipe Totec. That's going to be a real blast. You can't watch the deer one flayed and not be a little bit moved. Or maybe when the priest of Huitzilopochtli pulls the beating heart out of a right there, because you know it's traditional. Yeah, we'll need some animists. We will need some practitioners of various tribal religions from all over the world. Yeah. And you know what? All the Christians are going to have their shot. I mean, the Baptists are going to have to get up there and pray, and the Roman Catholics and the Greek Orthodox and the Syrian Orthodox and the Russian Orthodox. The Coptic Christians, and then there's the what remnant remains, and most of them probably fled and came here from one of the most ancient Christian sects in the world, the one that was established and living in Iraq until George W. Bush heard God tell him to bomb Iraq, and maybe some of them fled. There were, of course, the ones that we sent to heaven via Tomahawk cruise missile. Oh yeah, it's going to get to be a real circus just to try to get the job of government and done. And of course, Tim from LA reminds me, we're also going to have some Satanist praying, and they're going to be loving that. You know, our Father who art in hell, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in the nether world. Give us this day our sacrificed goat. Allow us of our trespasses as we sacrifice those who trespass against us, and lead us into temptation and deliver us to evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory in Hades. Amen. I mean, you can't discriminate against them. note coming in. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Tim posted that prayer earlier. Dr. John noting, Shupe Totec is my co-pilot. Bring it. I mean, if you really want to have a successful year, you can't be successful without being blessed by the bone. Yeah. A lot of, you know, I think they're a lot of fun, these members of the Supreme Court. So that's enough of a mess. But tucked away in the opinion is something rather shocking, because this opinion, of course, has been written by the five most fervently, passionately religious fanatics on the court, namely the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and don't forget Anthony Kennedy. Why do I say that? Well, this is why. In the opinion, as written by Kennedy and joined by the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and I really am going to work on it. I don't know if I'll do any good, because I'm really not very good with poster making or anything. But I want to get a poster made for the next trip to D.C. and just kind of casually wander over to the steps of the Supreme Court and hold up a sign in front of the Supreme Court that says the Supreme Court is infested with rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. If I have to letter it myself, I will, but it'll look kind of Jethro Bodine-ish, you know. No, in the body of the opinion, and these are these five guys, naturally, guys. These five guys are religious maniacs, okay? Two or three of them are members of Opus Dei, which, of course, is the fascist cult that was founded by the Spanish priest in the early part of the 20th century. Beloved of Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who, incidentally, is still dead. I mean, these folks, you know, they live in what Carl Sagan once referred to as a demon-haunted world. But in the body of the opinion, in justifying why it's okay for the town of Greece, New York, and any other town council, city council, what have you, to just set off a praying fit to beat the band. In the opinion, they use some very, very special words for why it's okay to have these prayers. Again, this opinion was not written by a bunch of wild-eyed atheists. I mean, this isn't the Baphomet bunch, okay? These folks really, really believe in their magic world. Yes, indeed. Devin pointing out that the followers of Walton the Great must include in their invocation every SKU of everything in the store. 1438 green peppers. 1912 shiitake mushrooms. 07291 cucumbers burpless. Yep, exactly. But these incredibly, incredibly religious people, in justifying opening public meetings, which are governmental and in nature and should never be intruded upon by religion. Charlie Pierce dug up a wonderful quote from little Jemmy Madison to go alongside this. Well, they decided to describe, to offer a rationale for why the praying is okay. And while I do not have prophetic powers and or mind reading, and I left my tattered old purple velvet robe with the frayed appliqued moon and stars on it is at the cleaners, and I haven't been able to find the magic eight ball with the busted window that says answer hazy, ask again later every time I ask it anything. Well, you don't need all that to realize that somewhere there's a fundamentalist who's saying, son of a, about this opinion. And here's the Moran nomination. We'll let Mr. Pogo from the Okefenokee Swamp deliver it for us. We have seen the enemy, and he is us. And by that I mean, we've been handed a gift. This is a magnificent gift. If we only had the will to use it and the megaphone to push the message out with. Because in the course of justifying these silly-ass hypocritical prayers, which, incidentally, Jesus doesn't himself, you know, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, doesn't think much of, you know, he says, don't be praying in public like the Pharisees, for they have their rewards. If you got any praying to get done, go into a closet and yada, 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 yada. You got to think Yeshua would be a little bit off-put by all this public hosannaing going on, oddly enough, in his name, in places like Greece, New York. But in describing these prayers, Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, the 5-4 majority, Anthony Kennedy described prayer as ceremonial. It's okay to have these prayers, no matter how sectarian they are, before the meeting, because they're just ceremonial. I mean, we pray, we have the Pledge of Allegiance, we bend somebody backwards over a stone and cut out their beating heart. You know, maybe we clack some sticks together as we walk to the four corners of the room to make sure that there are no demons present. These are ceremonial exercises. Right? That's what Anthony Kennedy says they are. That's why he says it's okay to have them in Greece, New York. But he also says that these prayers are not significant. Not significant. Somebody get Chappie Klingenschmidt on the line. Somebody call helmet-headed Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, proud son of Stanford University. Somebody call Dr. James Dobson, proud son of the University of Southern California. Call them all. Call whoever received the torch from Jerry Falwell as he headed off to hell. Call Pat Robertson. Call them one and all and tell them that the Supreme Court, a majority of the Supreme Court, and not just a majority of the Supreme Court, but the most religious, most pious, most zealous, most Christian members of the Supreme Court of the United States have declared in signed public opinion that prayer is ceremonial and not significant. You know the first thing I thought when I read this? It was with considerable sadness last month that we noted the passing of a friend of this program and the absolute godfather of liberal blogging, a man by the name of Terry Coppedge, known to the rest of the world as Bart Cop, who was a notorious atheist. I think Bart, peace be upon him, had a little surprise waiting for him after he passed away. And I don't think that the surprise was that there is an afterlife, and because he wasn't a believer, he was shuffled off this mortal coil and down into Satan's eternal barbecue pit, you know, with Jerry Falwell, George Wallace, and the like, Lester Maddox, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Strom Thurmond. No, no. No, I actually think he walked up. What? I thought I was going to be dead. And there's a guy sitting in front, and he goes, you're Bart Cop? Yeah. Come on in. Dude, party's ready. So what I think we're seeing here is the impact of Bart Cop's ascension in, well, not transubstantiation. There's it's the name of the mural of George Washington on the Capitol ceiling. Somebody help me. Anyway, apotheosis. Yes, the apotheosis. Only took me a minute there. The apotheosis of Bart Cop. Because Bart was forever talking about the uselessness of prayer. And I'm guessing maybe they haven't had a laugh up there in a good while. And hey, no, really, pay attention. Look down there. See those guys? Yeah. They'd burn witches at the stake if they got a chance. Really? Yeah. What? You really haven't been paying attention, have you? Well, no, not really. Let's let them think they're giving the religion industry a win, and Lord, why don't you infect their hands and make them write some stuff that'll send the right-wing religion industry right through the roof? You think this is really going to be funny, do you? Hey, look, who made people laugh for more than 10 years with a modem, a smart mouth, and the truth? Me or you? Oh, okay. Okay, so what do you got in mind? Well, I think we should have Kennedy write an opinion that is in direct contravention of an opinion he's already written, and in that opinion he should announce that prayer was ceremonial and not significant. Oh, you are a witty one! So would I. I think that maybe that's what happened. I mean, if you need a metaphysical explanation or the simple rational explanation, which would be the one that I would expect our old buddy Bart Cop to go with, would be that these people are such oblivious hypocrites that they don't even realize that they're making a sham and a mockery of the faith that they possess and profess every time they set pen to paper or electrons to screen or the idioms just really aren't working these days, are they? Pen is mightier than the sword. What's a pen? Is that number I enter with my debit card? Yeah, fat Tony. No, but the moron nomination? Us. Because we have been gifted with some the likes of which we have not seen nor will see in quite some time. If only we were just a little bit more, okay, a whole lot more subversive. If only we had the megaphone. If only we had the power to put it out there in the Twitterverse. And on the Facebook, and over the Tumblr, and send it around in our emails, and get other talk folks on the radio to discuss this fact. Five of the five most religious, zealously fervent, barbed wire wearing, hair shirt donning, self-flagellating members of the Supreme Court have declared that prayer is not significant, and strictly ceremonial. K Can you imagine? Can you imagine for a moment the outcry from the religion industry, from Dobson, from Robertson, from whoever the freak is at Falwell's outfit, from Kenneth Copeland, from Joyce Meyer, from James Dobson, from James Robison, from Franklin Graham? My God, they could have their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, strychnine-swilling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking minions out in front of the Supreme Court demanding the resignation of all five signatories to that opinion, demanding that they be impeached. Well, hell, they might just burn down the Supreme Court. I mean, you know, they're Christians. They're into burning things. Because these Supreme Court members have said something that you and I have known all along. That prayer is not significant. Wouldn't that be delightful? Wouldn't you love to see it? And I'm not talking about parody. I'm not talking about satire. I'm not talking about a spoof. I'm talking about reality. What if we could get some of the bookers for, meet the prostitutes and this week with George Snuffleupagus and what's his name on CBS? What if we could get their bookers just to bring in a couple of legal analysts to say, well, you know, Bob, I was really kind of taken with the fact that while they said they were preserving the right of town councils to have a prayer, that they actually said that prayer was not significant. Now, that's a big deal in a country that claims to be a Christian nation, wouldn't you say, Bob? And at that point in time, we're off to the races. I mean, as Fat Tony Scalia would go off on the lecture circuit somewhere and laugh. Hey, you know, maybe the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops could get an excommunicate Fat Tony thing going with Pope Frank over in Rome. Pope Frank can't think much of him in the first place. I mean, Jesus, Fat Tony Scalia thinks that John Paul II was a flaming liberal. This has real potential, I'm telling you. That's it. It's huge. I mean, I'm not kidding. This is not some joke. The last time anything this big was said was somewhere around 1802 when John Adams, was it 1802, signed the Treaty of Tripoli that contained the statement, the United States was in no wise founded in whole or in part upon the Christian religion. That's the last time a statement like this was made, and it has never been made by the Supreme Court of the United States. Prayer cases have largely centered on the degree to which such things are an establishment of religion in violation of the First Amendment. This purports to be that as well. But no. In their zeal to preserve what they think is religious liberty, or at least the liberty of Christians, they done went and done it. I mean, put this on Anthony Kennedy's tombstone when that time finally comes. Prayer is not significant. prayer is ceremonial. It's been a long time since those five rats, those rats plus Kennedy, that five, have said anything that I agree with. But by God, they hit that one right out of the park. You know, we've remarked from time to time on how the interweb tubes just sort of pick things up here and there. Let's see if this sneaks in. Oh, by the way, the downside to this Supreme Court opinion today, and you have to read the front page there to find out who was for and who was at public expense. The Obama administration. Yep. The politic from a position of fear Obama administration took the side of Greece, New York, and saying, well, hell yeah, let's have us some Christian praying, because we're about tired of being accused of being Muslim Kenyans. Maybe if we stand up for prayer, they'll quit praying that Sasha and Malia don't got a daddy no more. Maybe if we stand up, they'll quit praying that imprecatory prayer from the book of Satan's offering event. Note this to Ben. And we're sending again. Praise Jesus. So that's our first moran. The Supreme Court of the United States. And us. Because we are going to let this cassava melon float right over the right over the plate, and we're going to take the pitch. I don't know. It looks kind of slow and fat and easy to hit. Let's see if they got something harder. Yeah. Then, of course, as morans go, there's... There's something along the same lines for this Moran Monday. It's a beautiful moment from Judge Roy Moore, the man who was so unable to follow the basic law that he had to be removed from the Supreme Court. Inspiring. It was not too awfully long back when former Alabama, well, I guess he's back there now. He was the former Chief Justice, and then he went out and ran for this and ran for that. for some reason, somebody decided that they wanted to interview Judge Roy Moore. Mediaite had the story. I think Raw Story has it as well. Yeah. He was speaking at a luncheon. Because, you know, those fundies, they don't just go to lunch. They have a luncheon. And it was Pastors for Life. You know, the guys who lead those ceremonial, not significant prayers. And we were talking earlier about how maybe some Buddhists and some Muslims and some Hindus and some Unitarians and what have you might want to be lining up for the prayer list there at Greece, New York. Well, according to Judge Roy Moore, they need not apply. Oh, no.
The military. I have watched and watched. You know, I love that song that you started with, Onward Christian Soldiers, because we sang that at the United States Military Academy over and over and over, in chapel services and elsewhere.
Well, that's inspiring.
Our motto, everything about West Point was about God. Today, they have two men getting married in chapel.
Rubber!
So, excuse my fervor. Our political system is politically correct not to say prayers before council meetings, not to acknowledge God. Oh, we do it when we get in trouble, when they bomb the Twin Towers. All the Congress line up on the steps and acknowledge Buddha. No, they don't acknowledge Buddha. They acknowledge the God of the Scriptures upon which this nation was founded. But I'll tell you this.
From which this nation was founded. Just in case you were wondering whether Judge Roy Moore had stopped being a liar or not.
Everybody, to include the United States Supreme Court, has been deceived as to one little word in the First Amendment called religion. They can't define it. That's what the Ten Commandments case was about. I wanted them to define it, and they backed off and just decided not to take the case.
Meanwhile, they had removed your sorry ass from office, but we'll leave that part out, won't we? Yeah, I don't know why they didn't disbar you.
Because they can't. They can't define it the way Madison, and even the United States Supreme Court defined it, the duties we owe to the Creator and the manner of discharging it. They don't want to do that because that acknowledges a creator God. Buddha didn't create us. Mohammed didn't create us.
Yeah. Yeah, Roy and dumbasses assembled. Buddha didn't create us, nor did he say that he did. Mohammed didn't create us, nor did he say that he did. You stupid. Oh, you moron. Oh, you moron. I mean, we're not going to wander off into the monotheism swamp, but see, he thinks Muslims worship Muhammad. He thinks the Buddha, like Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, they were both teachers. Confucius was a teacher. You know, but this is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. So, let's let Roy handle this for himself.
It's the God of the Holy Scriptures. They didn't bring a Koran over on the pilgrim ship, Mayflower. Let's get real. Let's go back and learn our history. Let's stop playing games.
Yeah, and pilgrims that came over on the Mayflower didn't think that the Anglicans were Christians. They thought they were the only Christians. all by their lonesome selves. Didn't think the Catholics were Christians. Didn't think the Greek Orthodox were Christians. They were the only Christians. But let's not confuse things.
In our legal system, oh, that's what I like to talk. Middle lawyer out there, I said, look, talk to lawyers. I do. And I'm one.
More's the pity. See what I did there? More's the pity. Judge Roy Moore, got it. I don't just do things.
And I know how they taught the Constitution. And I know how they skipped over Blackstone.
Skipped over Blackstone? They skipped over Blackstone where you went to law school, Roy? Because they didn't up at Harvard on the Mon. I'm just saying. Didn't skip over Cook either. But he ain't the law of the land, Roy. The Constitution. You to download Dr. Bill's programs for this evening, this afternoon, and the last couple of weeks, so that you can understand what the likes of Mark Levin and the Goldwater Foundation and George Will and all those mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks want to do to that Constitution. Yeah.
And I don't know how they didn't talk about God, because you see, in the law, it just isn't politically correct.
No, dumbass, it isn't there. God does not appear in the Constitution. But none of these goobers to whom he speaks to him, not kidding, know that.
Because we've been divorced from God for so many years. Yet, throughout a couple of weeks, called One Nation Under God. And it shows the preface to the Declaration of Independence, Declaration, and the Constitution and Washington's farewell address, what our country was about. Black, white, all people.
Oh, wait a minute. Black, white, all people, Roy? That be, since you're talking Constitution, would that be three-fifths of the black people or three-fifths of an individual black person? I mean, come on. Gotta be an originalist here. You're an originalist, Roy.
All religions, all faiths.
Understand that whole pursuit of happiness business ain't none. Zip. Do go on, Roy.
Jefferson wrote truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights.
We're back to the Declaration of Independence again, which is not law. These guys want it to be, but it isn't. You want more detail on that? Go to Dr. Bill.
Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He just didn't pull those out of some book somewhere. He just didn't dream them up. He got them from the history of English law. Life was defined.
If you listen to Dr. Bill, you'll find out that they come from the Scottish Enlightenment. Not Locke. Oops. You know, it's people like Judge Roy Moore that you'd like to strap to a chair, get the tennis ball and the duct tape, do the sort of Clockwork Orange thing with the eyelids, and just let Dr. Bill explain all this to the freak. And he can sit there and rattle his chair. Nah, let's nail the chair to the ground, too. Might roll over and hurt himself. Maybe, is there hope for people like this freak? I don't know. Do facts matter to people like Judge Roy Moore, or are they just lying demagogues out there, running the hustle and pitching the baloney and passing the plate and waiting, you know, what? I don't know. I don't even know if you could find that out with sodium pentothal or hypnosis. Go on, Roy.
Do y'all want to know what pro-life would have been back then? You want to know the definition of life when they put, we hold these truths to be self-evident? That's out of Romans, by the way, 1:19. Because that which may be known of God is manifest, evident in them, for God hath showed unto them, for the invisible things, creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse.
Yeah, no, dumbass, that isn't in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
They didn't need an excuse, we haven't got one either.
No, we don't.
Life was defined, inherent in nature in every individual, and it begins in contemplation of law.
No, dumbass, it begins with the breath of life. Consult the people who wrote the old part of that book that you thump on so much. They'll tell you, breath of life. Which sort of narrows your, yeah.
That's right.
That's in the book. That's in Blackstone's commentaries. As soon as the infant stirs in his mother. But they knew when it kicked, it was alive. Today, our courts say, well, it's not alive until the head comes out. Now, if technology is supposed to increase our knowledge, how did we become so stupid?
That's a question you can only answer about yourself, Roy.
Oh, remember, for my people, is sottish children? Do you know what sottish means? Silly and stupid. How did we become so sottish?
Don't know. Don't know what makes you so sottish. Roy, might be the strychnine. Maybe it's the snake bites.
They apply exactly the opposite way it is. When they put life in there, it was in the womb. We know it begins at conception. Why aren't we going the right way instead of the wrong way?
Well, up in Tennessee, they're up in Tennessee, Stan. They're going to try to go your way, Roy. We'll get there.
Liberty. Oh, there's one.
Sit, Liberty. Sit.
You know, we think liberty today is do anything you want, don't we?
Yeah.
You got liberty, you can do anything you want, especially in private.
That's kind of creepy the way he says, especially in private. Yeah. You don't want to know what I do with my liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit.
There's little problems you can't go do. Things with animals in private. And...
See, what did I tell you? He talks about liberty, and the first thing he talks about is bestiality. I mean, if you put, you know, that whole journey to the center of the mind or whatever that science fiction thing was where they made them teensy-tiny people in a teensy-tiny submarine to go through somebody's bloodstream. No, won't go. Can't draft me. Don't want to go into the mind of Roy Moore where the word liberty immediately takes him to thinking about having sex with puppies. This is a sick, 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 creepy. Ooh, I mean, why is the man looking at me so funny? Icky, icky, icky. Man. Liberty. Having sex with animals. Liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Well, thanks for the laugh.
That's okay.
Notice how they laugh when they mention sex with animals. When he mentions sex with animals. Anybody watching?
But you do everything else in private. Liberty was the power of acting as one thinks fit without any restraint or control. Now we've lost those last few words. Unless by the law of nature, the law of God. That's why they put the law of nature and nature's God in the first sentence of the Declaration.
Oh, he's seeing now.
Declaration. That's what we're founded on.
Yeah, that's what they put it on. We're founded on.
You want to know what we're founded upon? You go to the Declaration, read the first sentence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. The law of God gave us a right to exist as a nation. It's printed in papers of James Madison, elsewhere.
Is it now? Think I'm going to have to send this here little old link to Dr. Bill. It might need a little more deconstructing than I'm actually capable of. Because little Jimmy Madison didn't draft the Declaration of Independence, did he? No, he didn't.
That's the basis of our law. Oh, but you say the Declaration of Independence isn't law, is it?
Uh-oh, he's going to take me down.
Well, go to the United States Code annotated on that little machine they call a computer and research it. Look up the organic laws of the United States of America. The first one is the Declaration.
Yeah. You want to tell me how many prosecutions there have been for violating the Declaration of Independence? How about none? No, by the way, again, if you will be so kind as to go and download Dr. Bill's last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 programs, you'll find this little piece of mummery and flummery absolutely dissected as well. This is the legal equivalent of the 6-year-old who is developing the ugly habit of using the word ain't. And when mama says, son, we don't say ain't. We are a little more than that. The little boy says, but ain't's in the dictionary. This is that. Not acknowledging the presence of the Declaration of Independence, or acknowledging the presence of the Declaration of Independence, is not the same as saying that it is the controlling law that governs our country. Because if that all men were created equal, all men are created equal language, well, if that was the controlling law of this country, then we would have had our little dust-up over slavery a hell of a lot sooner before than 1861.
In pursuit of happiness, what does it mean?
Dr. Bill's got that answered.
I'm not going to ask you. I don't want to embarrass anybody. It surely must mean we have nice cars and fancy televisions and good clothes and lots of food. No.
Well, some might define it that way. Some people who lacking in the way of much perspicacity, insight. But no. Happiness begins inside your own noggin. Or maybe with salvation. Let's check in with Roy.
No. That's not what pursuit of happiness means. It's taken right out of Blackstone that God had not made many rules for our behavior, but had reduced them to one paternal precept that man should pursue his own happiness. For he is so intimately connected, so inseparably interwoven, the laws of eternal justice with the happiness of each individual, that the latter cannot be attained but by serving the former, and if the former be punctually obeyed, it cannot help but induce the latter. Did y'all get that?
Not really mush mouth, but we'll trust you as far as we can throw you. Don't watch the video. Don't bother. But he is so... Where's that whole pride goeth before a fall thingy when you need it? Because he is so proud of himself. Oh, my word, my stars.
You can't be happy unless you follow God's law. And if you follow God's law, you can't help but be happy.
Amen.
It's all about God. It's all about his law. Today we've taken life.
What would this sound like if it was translated into Arabic and it was repeated on a... It was repeated by a guy with the headgear and the beard and all of that stuff. We'd run out and bomb him, wouldn't we? Sure we would. And yet, And yet, what's it mean to be happy? Means following God's. Please, that's straight out of the Quran, and probably 99% of other religious documents in the world. There's that. One more little bitty more in. Yeah, maybe two, maybe half a dozen. But I mentioned that they're going to try to do things. They're going to try to do things Roy Moore's way up in Tennessee, Stan. Yes, they are. And it's got everything in the world to do, of course, because it involves right-wingers or pig-lickins, booger-vores. It by definition involves women's insides. The state of Tennessee, the governor of the state of Tennessee, has taken a bold leap with regard to the unborn and them precious fetuses. Yes. Oh, a question coming in about Roy Moore from our buddy Asa in Vancouver. Let's back up a little bit here, Bob. With his vast constitutional knowledge base, how the F did this rocket surgeon receive the title of Chief Justice in the first place? It's because you go vote for him. Yeah. And so he toted his rock with the poor translation of the Ten Commandments on it, or one version at least. And said, "See, I got me a rock, and we're gonna judge people on God's law." And all the little Alabamians just clapped and said, "Glory to Jesus!" Yeah, that's how Georgia and Mississippi stand. And they've decided to take a bold leap into women's insides. Republican Governor Bill Haslam has allowed a bill to become law. And that bill says that a woman may now be charged with criminal assault if she uses illegal drugs during her pregnancy and somebody somewhere, based on some impulse and damned little science, decides that her use of the illegal drugs has harmed her fetuses. Now, all kinds of scientists and doctors and women's rights advocates went to Governor Haslam and they said, "This is a terrible bill. Bill, you shouldn't allow this to become law." But all he could hear was the cries of the endangered little fetuses inside his own mind. And it became law in the state of Tennessee, Stan. American Medical Association said it was a dumb, bad law. White House Office of National Drug Control Policy said it was a dumb, bad law. Bill signed the bill just the same. Now, what was interesting was that as compared to the bizarro world of a place like Alabama, where the rock-ribbed repiglickin stand shoulder to shoulder, there was actually some pushback in this case. Because lo and behold, a member of the Republican Party in Tennessee by the name of Mike Bell and six other Republicans in the Tennessee State Senate voted against the bill. I am sure that in their next election cycle, they will be vilified as baby killers, non-Christians, Satan worshipers, and whatever else comes in handy. Maybe Muslims. Bless his heart, he said, I represent a rural district. This is Senator, Republican Senator Mike Bell. He said, I represent a rural district. There's no treatment facility for these women there, and it would be a substantial drive for a woman caught in one of these situations to go to an approved treatment facility. Looking at the map of the state, there are several areas where this is going to be a problem. Never mind the people who don't have health care at all. What the hell do you do if you've got a poor woman who's pregnant and maybe she actually is poor enough to qualify for TEN care and get some prenatal care? What are you going to do if she comes to you and says that somewhere along the way she's got the morning sickness and that a neighbor lady of hers suggested maybe she honk on a doobie to make the nausea pass? What are you going to do? Even under the best of situations where the woman has medical attention, is the doctor going to have to drop the dime on her? Or are we just going to wait until the baby's born and stick mommy in the stir because she criminally assaulted the baby by taking a puff of weed? Now, let's be clear, however. The bill is specific insofar as it references illegal drugs. You know, your crack, your meth, your heroin, your Roxy, your Oxy, your Xanax, your Valium. Assuming that you've gotten them illegally, because that's the problem. If it's your Oxy, your Roxy, your Xanax, or your Valium, and you've got a prescription for it, and your baby's born with one arm sticking out of the top of its head, Tennessee ain't going to do nothing to you. Because, of course, the representatives of the pharmaceutical industry, who I'm sure spend no small amount of time in the State House in Tennessee there in Nash Vegas, wouldn't take too kindly to that. They're also not going to bust mommy if mommy is a drunk and has a little drinky just as an eye opener in the morning. A little cocktail with lunch. Maybe a little something-something in the middle of the afternoon and swig out of the jug after dinner to get her rested up for bedtime. That's legal. If the baby is born with low birth weight because mommy is honking on cigarettes, she's also not in trouble with the law. At least not in terms of a jailable offense. See how this works? Just another day in another corner of America where a right-wing legislature has raised crapping on the poor to a high art, you know, because they love life. Note coming in from Texas. Betsy, in Williamson County, Texas, if a woman or teenage girl is arrested for anything and tests positive for drugs, she's also tested for pregnancy. And they keep her in jail if treatment is not an option, and treatment usually is not an option. This happened to a 16-year-old I knew, Texas Betsy says. Of course. Because this is a brutal country with a brutal punishment fetish. Now, the state of Tennessee also doesn't give a good goddamn if mommy happens to live next to a mountaintop removal site and is breathing in polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and is breathing in ultrafine silica particles and ultrafine molybdenum particles and ultrafine coal particles and all kinds of ultrafine particles. The state of Tennessee doesn't give a damn about that. Even if mommy has a 140% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a mommy who smokes does. In the state of Tennessee, there are 177 addiction treatment facilities. And they of those 177, only two of them provide on-site prenatal care and also allow older children to stay with their mothers while they're undergoing treatment. There is no Medicaid expansion in Tennessee, Stan. Nope. Can't have that. That's communism. Next thing you know, pregnant mommies will be giving birth to little babies that are whistling the damned Internationale on their way out of the birth canal. See how Internationale rhymes with birth canal? The sponsor, and this is where we get around to the Moran Monday nomination, is representing Terry Lynn Weaver. She was one of the primary sponsors of the bill in the Tennessee Stan House of Representing. She was asked by Salon how she squared her bill that craps who have come into contact with illegal drugs with the fact that there are no treatment options, and God knows tens of thousands of women in Tennessee who don't have health care. I'm sure she was asked by Salon much more nicely than that. And her her answer was, and herewith the Moran Monday nomination. Well, I don't know what to say about how some women have insurance and some do not. It's a terrible thing, but I don't want to get into that because that's another subject. I'll worry about it tomorrow. Them little fetuses can depend upon the kindness of strangers. Yeah, I added those last couple of lines. Some women have birth, have insurance, some don't. I don't know nothing about that. It's a different subject. Whether they're out there using the illegal drugs on their precious little fetuses that I am not going to give a good old-fashioned tinker's damn about as soon as the little feller or little girl is born. Because I am a family values Republican, and from conception to birth is life, and after that, well, you're on your own, sugar. G, Jesus. I mean, it's a terrible thing. Notice, she says, it's a terrible thing that some women have health insurance and others do not. Anybody want to do a legislative lookup and see how many times Representative Terry Lynn Weaver has been out there opining against the socialist Medicaid expansion? Because you know she has. You know, that Obama, that woman. Charisse A. Scott is the CEO of an outfit called Sister Reach. She said, despite our advocacy attempts and regardless of the impact this law will have on marginalized families, despite the danger that medical professionals have noted a law of this magnitude will cause, our governor chose his party over the experts. This law separates mothers from their children and is not patient-centered. Tennessee families who are already being hit the hardest by policies such as the failure to expand Medicaid, poverty, and a lack of available drug treatment facilities struggling with drug addiction in Shelby County, Tennessee, rural county, most, not all, but most of the Republican Party does not give a damn. Because pro-life is entirely a sham. It's a fraud practiced upon a credulous public that assuages its own guilt and metes out its own terrors upon the people of that state by claiming that they follow some religious tenet that says they're responsible the unborn, but have no regard for the living. Jesus. 25 minutes past the hour. God is an illegal drug. Mercury is one of those chemicals, one of those elements, one of those heavy metals that gets put into the air, sacred coal. The holy coal. And it gets into the fish, and it gets into the mommy, and it gets into the baby by virtue of a process created some 6,000 years ago by the loving creator God of Judge Roy Moore. You understand? Not gonna bust mommy for any of the... Yes, I can. Doctor, what is your opinion? She did. Execute her! Burn her! Send her to the stocks! Off to the dunking chair with her! Right? Yeah. Whew. Now, phones are open. Phone lines are open. To the Horn Family Congregation Commune group. Or bring them via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address at Skype. Bring them via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Bring your nominations by Facebook. Bring your nominations. Come one, come all who walk or crawl. We are at the halfway point of this Moran Monday edition of the Horn. We are at zero for our fundraising efforts of the evening. We're trying to raise $285 to cover tonight and tomorrow. I have to be away tomorrow, but it's still, you know, part of the average. Divide that by 20 or something. Anyway, we have to raise $135 this evening. And we'll mix in 150, but the operative is that right now we are at zero. Otherwise known as how to get in a fundraising hole early in the month. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address, as well. That meant he didn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves. If you want to work by the mail route, well, just shoot me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to wear the spider-proof gloves.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Gnashing night, Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? But one ain't here still, chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels, but that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you've ever met. Baby dance circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance?
Probably the most apropos song on that topic I have ever heard. That, of course, the Bottle Rockets, welfare music. Angry fat man on the radio wants to keep his taxes way down low. Who in heaven's name must they have been singing about? Goodness me. It is 27 minutes before the hour, and let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Bill.
Well, I'm glad to hear you talking to me because you keep bouncing off the computer.
Yes, I know. I do know.
Okay, so there's something going on. It's not just my computer. No,
I tell you what, I think we can probably say with near 100% certainty that it is never your computer. And it's not anybody else's computer. It is something that's happening between here and the server that I send one stream up to. I only send one stream, and then everybody taps into the server, which is where it comes out of. And that's how this works.
You got somebody playing with you, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I'm certain of it.
Somebody's attacking my memory. I mean, you know, the thing about I was trying to think of the first big drug that made its appearance in the average household. It was a speed thing. They called them Christmas trees, was the street name. I can't think of the type of drug that it was. It's killing me, Bob, to have to watch my memory fade away somewhat in my old age. It's just overloaded, Bob. I picked up a good copy of A Killer Angels, which was the book that it was based on.
Traumatization. I think it nobles up Robert E. Lee more than he was, but that's because
a guy who skipped out of the country.
I don't know.
I think he was one of Washington's White Horse Harry or one of those guys, and whoever the hell it was, there was some Well, you know, the debt problem that people had in those days. Well, didn't they still have debtors' prisons going on in England in the 1870s?
I'm not sure when that was ended.
Yeah, because I sometimes feel that we're going to see a load of it again in this country. But that's what they did. This guy has one, the Scover?
Yeah.
Does he have any relations that own the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah. Same family. Brothers.
Well, I guess I can give up on that team because I, you know, to me that team hasn't been the same since there was been a lot of changes that were done to it. All I know is that the Cincinnati Bengals made the Super Bowl twice, but and the Browns haven't seen it yet. So when Modell did not make the Hall of Fame, there's a lot of people around 70 years or older who are not too unhappy with that fact. Because the guy Modell did do great things for pro football, but it was called television that he did. Because television in the old days, you were lucky to see the away games were broadcast. But that was it. I mean, TV was not it was that Baltimore Giants game that went overtime. Now when Amici scored the winning touchdown and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
That was the game that made the game, that particular piece of work. There's some interesting things that people can dig out from pro football records, but Paul Brown and George Halas, you talk about two guys who hated each other.
Well, Haslam came into Cleveland and kind of charmed the city for a little bit, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. But, you know.
Then wasn't there some sort of scandal about, well, don't the scandals always involve money?
Yeah, something involved those truck stops.
Yeah. Or not paying people right, or I forget.
Yeah, something going on financially.
We shouldn't be surprised, Bill. I mean, the what it boils down to is the pig lickings are running out of people to crap on, and at this point in time, they get busted every time they try to do it to people of color, at least in the African American community, they do. They've largely given up trying to crap on people of color in the Latino community.
Yeah.
And they're down to, even the last election cycle, 2012, we saw how badly they got busted for trying to crap on women. They can't learn because the essential problem inside the political philosophy of the Republican Party is that they are entirely a negative party. They are not for anything. They are against things. They're against women being able to make decisions about their own insides. They are against a diverse and at least somewhat equal country. They're against making a living wage. There is nothing. I mean, the only thing they can say that they're for is blowing up small countries that can't stand up to us. And what else?
Well, what it amounts to is it looks like the John Birch Society has risen from the dead.
Were they ever?
Because I can bore you to death with stories of the. I just got a book sent to me today called Street Without Joy, which is a bunch of writing by Bernard Fall, who wrote a good book on Dean Being Fool and on the French. I mean, the whole French colonial thing, Bob, is so wacky. The Japanese had armies there, but yet the French still had their army, the Free French, not the Free French, the so-called, who was it, what do they call those guys in France?
The Foreign Legion.
The Vichy government. Oh, in fact, the Japanese had the Vietnamese producing more products for the Japanese army. That was the thing the Japanese did that was kind of similar to what the Nazis did. Go into a country and steal all the natural resources you can get. You know, one of the first places they grabbed was the so-called Dutch East Indies. That's another piece of criminal activity in name, you know, because of the oil interests that were there. It seems that oil has been a problem ever since it was devised. The use of it was devised. It's been another treasure to fight over and to steal and to, you know, and of course you got the, another one, you're sitting on top of one over there. You're sitting on top of it when the earth isn't rumbling and shooting past your window.
Yeah, no kidding.
Chuck, you get the sarcasm there, you know.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, because it seems that it comes down. We used to have an expression in the 70s, was follow the money, was something you heard a lot in debates and arguments about what was going on with society. Follow the money. Now, we just had a situation in Lakewood, Ohio, a couple of weeks ago on a weekend, where there was a big gang thing threatened. And this is, of course, if I say that on the radio, people say, oh, must have been those black kids again. Oh, Bob, it was white kids. It was all white. I mean, this is going back to my childhood when gang fighting was not along racial lines. You know, it was, in some neighborhoods, it was along lines of, it was like in one neighborhood, there was large groups of Irish, large groups of Italian, large groups of Slovenians. Now, three groups that were basically the same religious background, right?
Right, sure.
Catholic. And these guys were battling it out. These guys had that idea that one guy's got to be tougher than another. And that was your basic street society. We're not talking about big countries because that goes on constantly. If I hear one more Republicans talking about we need to have a war with Putin over, you know, over Ukraine. You want to go fight him? You go fight him. But my buddy, because you know, Bob, you and I know, how many missiles does Putin still have his hands on?
More than enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's downright frightening. And but I just, that's why I had to ask about the governor. Money begets power, doesn't it?
It seems to in this day and age, and I guess it always has. From the wealth, you know, the birth of democracy in Athens was a fight between rich people who had the support of the poor, and rich people who had the support of the rich, and the poor won. But it was poor men, and democracy never meant women, never meant slaves. The Roman Republic was run by the rich. You know, come on forward. There haven't been many times on Earth when this is not obtained.
Yeah. It's so hard to keep up with it. But basically, it goes down to the old follow the money line, because that's what seems to be the one common denominator, the common bond between the powerful on one side and everybody else on the other. The money angle is what does it, you know? But I'll tell you what, if you've got somebody else online, pick them up and I'll hang on and listen to the show, because I don't know if you're going to, be off and on all night. I don't know, you know.
I understand.
Because I'm hoping. Because I'm not always on the mark every time. I mean, I usually, I tend to fall back into the same stuff, that this power begets war. And war begets a certain thinking pattern. This, because I wanted to say it, I'd almost point at this idea of the fetuses, save the babies, keep the, because in other words, if the babies, there are more brown and black babies, what happens to the power structure when you have voting going on, real voting? What could happen to the power structure?
Well, hence all the voter suppression efforts going on. There are demographic realities that are at work in this country right now, Bill, that it's just a fact. This is not going to be a white majority America in another 10, 15 years, if it really is now. And understanding that we're working within the boundaries of race, which is bullshit in the first place.
Yeah, of course.
But the fact of the matter is, these white wingers know that. Those people get hold of it.
Well, they sure.
Because, you know, they'll hell and be damned if they're going to sit there and support Social Security for them people that won't go to work.
Yeah.
Because inside their own sick, twisted minds, nobody works but them.
Yeah. Well, they've been against Social Security since the day Roosevelt put it through. They have been against that. I can pick up a Canadian, 50,000-watt Canadian radio station, which, man, did I love that station in the 70s. I'm dialing through it, and I hear this guitar player just kicking the living crap out of an instrumental version of Chuck Berry's Memphis. Lonnie Mack was the guy's name. He's from Indiana. You know, there's that corner of Indiana that comes and butts up close to Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of entertainers came out of Indiana and ended up working in Cincinnati. Hell, I was playing in Detroit. I spent an evening sitting around talking with these guys from the MC5 was sitting in a burned out, I mean, this apartment building looked like somebody had dropped a bomb on it. This was 67, around Christmas time. So I think you know what went down in Detroit previous to that time period. I think it was that summer when they had a big boning and, you know, it was a funny place to be where you just kept butting up against somebody and you find out that like this guy that did that thing floating around on the internet where I'm standing there playing in this coffee house and the sound is pitiful. But I'm wearing a two-pocket short-sleeve white shirt. What a step, you know. I wasn't wearing any hippie clothes. But the guy that produced it was the guy who runs Fox News. Not mean the family, I mean the producer, the pleasure himself. I had the pleasure of knowing him. In fact, I did a commercial for Saxby. I did 7 minutes of commercial playing for Saxby when he was running for the Senate. I don't think you can dig those commercials out. All I did was play in the background. But they threw some money at you, and you know, being a young person, you figure, what the hell, I'll take the money, it's good. Better than they're paying me for playing half the night in some saloon, you know. And all I can say, the remarkable thing about being in bars and being around college bars, and all the changes in the social, around the social aspects of the society were there. And it looked like a good time. In fact, the guy, you know, the guy that does the, did the comic books that were so popular for a while? Mr. Natural and all those other, did you see any of that stuff? Was that so far before your time?
I was a little young, but I know of which you speak.
Yeah, because he worked for American Greetings. I bumped into his, and I wasn't overly impressed with the personality involved, you know, the talent.
Oh, and well, I mean, the dude with the long white beard has become, you know, eponymous.
Yeah, Mr. Natural himself, yes. Yeah, I think that it was a funny time to be alive. I'm sure you saw plenty, though. You see, a guy stopped by here a few weeks ago that owned one bar, and he'd spent 3 years standing next to a guy named Randy White at the University of Maryland. And you know Randy White, you go out of Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. Cowboys.
And that's another thing. This weekend down to Canton, they had this big weekend with all kinds of guest speakers, like Terry Bradshaw was one. The Bradshaw I used to enjoy watching. He'd appear on a boat with a fisherman. in the boat, and what was the one Cajun, the I Guarantee Man?
Oh, Justin Wilson?
Yeah, Wilson would show up there, and funny time to be alive, Bob. But I'll let you go and let somebody else get on here, but I'm stuck. Because we can make the computers can't dance. I have friends, a couple of my friends that are good at that. And but they're good at it, too. When I say good, I mean they don't do things. They don't go out of their way to mess with you, you know. They go out of their way to, here's a bucket, Bill. I'm going to bail your fat butt out of problems on this one.
Well, Bill,
anyway, I'll hang in there.
All right, you have yourself a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. Hey, you want me to keep you on hold?
Yeah.
Okay, stand by. Maybe we should have lit up the bat signal for the Skype group. I don't know. But that doesn't help anybody who's not in the Skype group who's trying to listen. Hopefully this will come back to you because I'm not buffered right now. There is latency involved with internet broadcasting. There's going to be a few seconds delay, up to a couple of minutes delay, depending on where you are. So the fact that I disappear at your end at a given time means I probably disappeared a few seconds or a couple of minutes before in my real time. Well, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Jim, I'm about at my wit's end. It's a short trip. But.
Oh, you and me both. And interesting talking. I had a little flashback when you're talking about the Little Miss Natural thing. Comedy there. But what you were talking about earlier was the you're talking about religious nut jobs and these religious just to BS with the bullshit. If I practiced, you know, I got involved to a Buddhist sect, you know, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And even within Buddhism, now, you know, this is 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, it was pretty cool. But even within that, there are sects. I mean, that you know, right up, this is the right, this is the true Buddhism, you know, that they have told you that.
And they're the ones who ring the bells and the ones who spin the wheels and the ones who play in sand and the ones who sit and the ones who stand. And look, I was watching Tony Bourdain's CNN show on Netflix, and one of the first programs he did was to go to Myanmar when it was first opened up, and he was talking to some people who had been jailed, and of course that place was a horrible dictatorship. And he said, yeah, you're jailed, and they give you, you know, one bowl of thin soup and a little bit of bread every day or rice or whatever it was. And on Thursdays, Thursdays are the only day you get meat, you get fish. He said, the funny thing is, though, in Myanmar, in Burma, fish only have heads and tails, and the middle of them just isn't there because that's all you got was fish heads and fish tails. And he said, if you go to the priests, the monks or Buddhist monks or whatever, and complain, they say, well, that just means your karma's in better shape for the next time around. Essentially, suffer quietly. And then, a couple of weeks ago, I'm reading about the militant Buddhists who are going and burning down Christian churches and somebody's temples and somebody's mosque. And I'm like, really? The Buddhists? Really?
Yeah, that was on, what's his name, Malloy's show about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, how he was even expressing kind of surprise because usually Buddhists used to kind of stay out of that. But going back to like when I practiced it, I found it kind of weird. But right away, oh, you're in the right sect. This is the right sect. And this is the true Buddhism. And man, when I say, from what I understand, I mean, the chants were the same, but the other sect, because there was a big split when it was between the priest and...
Oh, you know that old joke, Jim, where the two guys are standing on a bridge?
Mm-hmm.
And the one guy says, yeah, what religion are you? He says, Baptist. He goes, how about that? Me too. And he says, what kind of Baptist? He says, American. Me too. What kind of American Baptist? Free will. Me too. What kind of free will Baptist? Hard shell. I'm soft shell. Die, heretic!
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and if you look at history, because I've read history, I mean, it's like that with every religion. It all ends up being a power struggle. I mean, everything was cool with the Muslim religion shortly after Muhammad died, and then that's how you get the Sunni and the Shia, and ditto with in Buddhism. It's like that, and Christianity. You got everything was cool. The Catholics and
look, I saw a story. I think it was our buddy Gregory who posted it earlier today. Out in Turkey somewhere, they found a 1,500-year-old Bible that contains a gospel called the Gospel of Barnabas that says that Jesus wasn't really crucified, that Judas was crucified in his stead.
Wow, really?
I haven't had enough time to research it to find out if this is for real, but it was interesting as all hell. It was plenty interesting because all that stuff's out there. There were all kinds of disagreements in the so-called early church because they were all just little cult here, little cult here, little cult there. They're a cult and a seer away. And apparently, in this Bible, if it's for real, it's written that Paul is an imposter. I mean, these people were not nice to each other.
They aren't now.
No. So, right.
You're not in the right sect. I mean, just like your little joke was. That is true. I mean, and what it really boils down to, it's the money. Money talks and bullshit walks. That's how they're really, the money and the power. It's just like, even within, you wouldn't think money would have, but you're like, the more you give, the more the go.
Well, I mean, look at the suppressed.
They don't give you back.
There were all kinds of groups that were suppressed. The Gnostics were suppressed. Right. The early church at Jerusalem got into it with Paul, and they don't. And the idiots who compiled the New Testament didn't even realize they were compiling books that were in opposition to each other. Because, for instance, the Book of James is a refutation from the Jerusalem Church of all the poppycock and utter horse shit that Paul was teaching.
Right.
And Paul's out there saying, the Jerusalem Church has it all wrong. Yada 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 yada. Okay, there's never been universality in the church. Constantine, who declared Christianity to be a state religion in the 4th century AD, was not baptized until he was about to die, and he wound up being baptized by a priest bishop of the sect that he had already declared to be heretical. And the church is still battling against the Arian heresy.
Well, the other weird thing was I remember... Okay, with Galileo, and he got kind of excommunicated, but then, 300-400 years after he was dead or whatever, I kind of remember hearing or reading something somewhere about, everything's okay. So I guess, they've kind of forgiven Galileo for telling the truth about the Earth not being the center of the universe. So I guess he spent a couple of years in hell, a couple of hundred years in hell of purgatory. I mean, the story.
Yeah, he was down there, and I don't know. Maybe he was in limbo with all the unbaptized babies.
Well, that's like I had a
I mean, just imagine for a moment that this is now, and I'm not trying to turn this into Wednesday. I started off with the Supreme Court ruling, okay?
Right.
That says that prayer is ceremonial and not significant, with which I agree. But this is the religion they want to establish. But then you have to say, which religion? Oh, okay. Maybe it's Roman Catholicism. Maybe it's the Baptists, but it's got to be Christian. Okay? But none of them can agree with each other. I mean, what makes it so?
Oh, I know.
I mean, if you look at it from that standpoint, where there are 10,000 different interpretations of how one gets to live after death. It's a, you know, it's a paradise with 5,000 with 10,000 combinations. You roll them, and you've got to get a 1 in 10,000 number. Otherwise, you're going to go fry. Why bother?
It is funny. I mean, when you look at it, and then, is it like you, I mean, like, I know a couple people are kind of like that, and they just so, I mean, even when I practiced, I wasn't like that super duper shakabuku, turn somebody on, tell them about it. But there are people like that. There are people, they're Christians, but how they'll try and get you to, you know, I don't even like saying that somebody sneezes because I, from what I understand, that comes because supposedly you're afraid of losing your soul.
No. It's to keep It's to keep demons from entering you.
Oh, during the Black Plague or something.
No. It's just to keep. We say God bless you when people sneeze, so that they will not become infested with demons when they, in order to sneeze.
See, I get it.
So, you know, I much prefer the German approach, Gesundheit. You know, good health to you.
Oh, that's what that means?
Yeah.
Because I was wondering if that's some sort of German, God bless you, version.
Have, you know, Gesund, health, height, have health.
Okay.
Or be healthy.
I'll start saying that then. But, I mean, I hear a lot about, like, I mean, when they speak. Just because of my, it just blows my mind, you know? I mean, in the 21st century, we're still thinking and then listening to what you're playing. And then they got people who actually, yes, brother, yes, they really believe that. And, oh, no, what I was going to say was, one more thing real quick. As you know, I had not one but two brain aneurysms, right? And then when I was 10, one when I was 12. And the second one happened when I was 12, and I was kind of, it was like a little Presbyterian youth group I was going, kind of, mostly just for socialization and stuff. And guess what happened? That's when I had the second brain aneurysm. I said, screw this religion crap. You know, I mean, Jesus wasn't watching out for me. Let me have.
Sure wasn't protecting you against the aneurysms. Or, but then again, the religious people would say, well, yes, he was, because you didn't die.
Right. Oh, exactly. They're just being tested. It's the. I know. It's kind of funny, but except when you kind of talk with somebody and you find they really, truly believe it. I mean, a friend of my mother's son.
I know, and you tend to look and go, wow, really?
You actually, he's doing some sort of prayer thing with some sort of priest, and he's got some issues. And it's just, yeah, exactly. Like you said, really, dude. I really don't even know him. But
I take the George Carlin approach. He said, "Listen, religion's like a lift in your shoes, but let's not go nailing lifts on the bottom of the natives' feet." So
yeah. So
hey, Jim, I'm gonna roll here. It's awful good to talk to you.
Catch you later.
We are, we've been sending kind of consistently for a little bit. I don't know what to make of it.
I was going to tell you real quick, I was doing real good with your signal, and then it just started, Bill was saying, kind of break it up, or I was losing it, so. I don't know what's up. Maybe there are some.
I got no answers. I wish I did.
Well, I'll catch the rest of the show on the rebroad, all right?
All right, sounds good. You take it easy, Jim.
All right.
Bye now. Calling from Louisiana, Stan. That's our buddy Jim. Our buddy Shorty from L.A. Just sent me the link to the story. It's sonsonthepyre.com. And the reason I didn't make a big deal out of it is because I'm trying to make sure that this is not a parody site or a satire site. I don't like being burned that way. 1,500-year-old Bible confirms that Jesus Christ was not crucified. Vatican in awe. The Vatican has asked to be given the book so that they can inspect it at the Vatican, and nobody in their right mind would ever do. Oh, what book? Oh, that. Oh, dog ate it. Yeah. Now. So here we are at 8 p.m., and no, we're at zero for fundraising for the evening, but that's understandable because I've been getting the emails from people just sort of tuning out left and right. Can't hear you. You're buffering up. Going to do something else. Yeah, I understand. I probably wouldn't have the patience to put up with it either. I wish to God I knew what it was. But I don't. So, I don't know. Shall we try to shamble through a little more conversation radio, a little bit more and Monday? Some of these Moran stories are just about too damn brutal to even bring up in the context of Moranity. Wow. But I don't know, maybe we'll try. Because there's a bunch of stuff to work with. It has been confirmed, by the way, that that the bomb train of last week did, in fact, pass through the neighborhood here. I don't know if we would have heard the big boom had it blown up in the New River Gorge or not. I guess it kind of depends on where it was. But, yeah, right through here. Some follow-up stuff to the ongoing saga of the Freedom Industries coal treatment chemical disaster. The state of West Virginia has now initiated a program, or not initiated a program, but asked the EPA, and the state of West Virginia asked the EPA is extremely ironic in and of itself because of the amount of time that has been spent by the government of the state of West Virginia excoriating the EPA. But the EPA is going to begin testing in the hopes of determining safe levels of crude methylchlorohexane methanol for people to inhale. This is a sort of chemical equivalent to closing the barn door once the horse is about 1,000 miles away. The story over at Think Progress included a photo from Associated Press photographer Steve Helber going back to January the 13th, 2014, showing a maintenance worker inside the capital of the state of West Virginia. I think I've been in that restroom. Testing the water in the capital by opening the faucet, gathering some water into the palm of his right hand, and sticking it up and smelling the water in his hand. That's what passes for testing, the odor test for crude MCHM in West Virginia. Now, is this guy going to be able to file for workers' compensation in 10, 15 years? Well, if he does, the workers' compensation system was gutted within an inch of its life by Joe Manchin back when he was governor. Then there's a Joe Manchin Moran story out there. Joe Manchin went on the TV today to complain and whine and piss and moan about how he's not sure he likes to be a senator more, because he's so proud of the bipartisan work he did when he was governor of West Virginia, and he can't get things done, and he doesn't like to be where he can't get things done, and he can't get nothing done in the Senate. Well, maybe if he would start acting like a Democrat instead of a Republican wannabe, he'd get something accomplished. But this is all the big setup for the fact that he term limited, you know, he left because he wanted to be a senator so bad when Senator Byrd died. But Governor Earl Ray can't run for another term in 2016, so Joe's thinking he'd like to come back here and be governor some more, like Arch Moore did. right before he got sent to prison. God Almighty. And, of course, the EPA is nothing but pure Satanism to just about any politician in the state of West Virginia, because they're trying to wage a war on coal and hurt our coal jobs, and they don't understand the hard working people who depend on coal, and the hard working coal executives who depend on coal, and the hard working shareholders who depend on coal. And they don't want the EPA to try to understand the hardworking people who live near mountaintop removal and get poisoned for their trouble. Who don't get a check, who don't get a share dividend, who don't get, right. But they're going to figure, the EPA is going to figure how much MCHM it's safe to breathe. Not so much on how much is it safe to be ingesting before anybody tells you the water's poisoned. Which, of course, goes hand in hand with the, and this is a real la-la. The office of Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, GERT, via Peter G. Markham, general counsel, in other words, head lawyer for GERT, has sent out a questionnaire for people to answer. You have to give your name. You have to give your address. You have to give your phone number. You have to give your email. You have to give the county you live in. Please describe how you were personally affected by the water crisis. Do you believe government agencies, including federal, state, local agencies, and emergency responders, handled the water crisis appropriately? Please elaborate. In what ways did government agencies successfully respond to the water crisis? Wow. In what ways did government agencies underperform? What specific recommendations can you offer for improvement? Were you personally assisted by any government agencies during the water crisis? If so, please identify the agencies that assisted you and describe the assistance they provided. Were you pleased with the assistance you received? Please elaborate. Were you personally assisted by any non-governmental, charitable, or volunteer organizations during the water crisis? If so, please identify the organization that assisted you and describe the assistance they provided. Were you pleased with the assistance you received? Please elaborate. Please offer any additional comments. Wow. I tell you what, requiring everybody's name, address, phone number, email, and the county they live in, that's sure going to encourage some candor from people going, hey, what the... I drank poison for 7 hours because you guys didn't order the water system shut off. Yeah. So. There's that. Meanwhile, the bankruptcy court handling the Freedom Industries bankruptcy is beginning to worry a little bit that all the lawyers are going to get paid before there's even enough money left over to tear that place down safely and cart it off. Here's the fun part. Some experts are warning that in attempting to tear down this facility, there may possibly be another spill. Because, again, they really don't know. And a group of people who make up just about the very same group of people who were Freedom Industries, how about that? They formed a new corporation. Yeah, I'll be damned. Because, see, there are no consequences for people here. Oh, sure, the corporation might go into bankruptcy. The corporation might be dissolved. The corporation might cease to exist. But, I mean, folks have a right to make a living, right? A right good living, selling toxic chemicals that nobody knows about to the coal industry? Sure, because this is West Virginia, Stan. Seventeen minutes past the hour again. to the extent that this is actually getting through. We try to raise $150 on any given evening, and I guess because we've had such transmission problems, we're at zero, so we are starting out the week in a pretty, we're on the way to being in a hole. And again, another reminder, I will not be here tomorrow night, so I have a function I have to take Ferg to. So there's that as well. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Let us go forthwith to the phones. I suspect this is our buddy Will in Chicago. Is that you, Will?
Yes, I'm here in my undisclosed location, the Batcave, where my internet connection may be acting up. A few thoughts. One, I would like to hand this Supreme Court majority an incredibly huge moron prize, because they have done so far something that no Supreme Court has ever done in a decision before. You know what that is?
What?
They have managed to insult billions of people around the planet simultaneously by the decision that prayer is merely ceremonial. Whether or not one believes in the divine, prayer at least can be said to have meaning to the person making the prayer.
Right. I mean, along the same lines as meditation.
Exactly. And I'll give you a prayer that sadly is being said in Chicago, in Appalachia, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and many other places. Oh, Lord, please let this child live. So essentially we have a Supreme Court that now feels fit to rule on what is meaningful and not meaningful to a person. And from looking at Judge Kagan's story on Talking Points, a memo on Judge Kagan's dissent, it seems that this court majority ignored the fact that for at least a decade these prayers have been sectarian in nature. And Kagan says, okay, what about the possibility that a judge will require people to stand during a Christian prayer or similar things? I think that my great problem with this court is that it has grown progressively worse since Bush.
Can we at least say regressively worse?
Well, let's say so regressively worse that were the Supreme Court justices in the majority to physically go the direction that rulings are, they would collapse in their robes and we would just find a collection of amoebas.
Yeah.
If not viruses.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they made that reference in the ruling today, the majority did, about how if nobody wants to participate in the prayer, they can just leave the room. Over that ground before, Will.
Yes, we have. And guess what? And saying that someone should be made to feel uncomfortable about a government that they wish to participate in, which they are paying taxes for, is essentially to say, we're sorry, Mr. Non-believer, Miss Non-Christian, Mr. Jew, Mr. Muslim, Mr. Agnostic, Mr. Clergy of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, or what have you. You really don't matter here. And guess what? We have fought against that.
Where'd you go, Will? Will? Huh. A clue. Are you there? No, the call dropped. That was a significant clue. Lost Will in mid conversation, and I'm tempted to just kind of put a kibosh on everything and maybe spend some time with Chantel, because that was kind of weird. We buffered up at the same time that we dropped Will's call. That's telling. That's why I said, a clue. Because those things, those two things do run together. Yeah, I see Robert in Australia pointing out here in Oz, you didn't buffer. You just disconnected. Just like that, I got the message. Disconnected. I tried to reconnect. I'd get connecting, then disconnected. I turned on some comedy for 10 minutes, tried again. I connected straight away, and now I'm hearing you fine. Until it happens again. Yeah, Marty noting, it happened again. I'll get the podcast, man. And I understand that completely. Oh, God. Stockton Larry in the chat room pointing out, according to the president's analyst, it's always the phone company. What a great, great movie that is, The President's Analyst. James Coburn, was it, Larry? Yeah. Thanks very much. Apparently, our buddy Horst has helped out with the More in Monday hole, and so has our buddy Asa. Thank you both very, very much. It's much appreciated when we're in a hole like this. Well, it's not a hole yet. It'll only be a hole at, like, you know, 38 minutes from now. Anyway, back to the phones. I suspect we have Will back. Is that you, Will?
And yes, it is. And I'd like to say, if you want to fight the hole as well as the ignorant opinions of the Supreme Court and state legislators, and I'll be going into one shortly, please remember there are various ways to donate to the Horn. And also, if you are so moved by Bobby Agnes's recent wedding anniversary and the charming photo of their daughter for prom to give a donation, please do so.
You don't miss a lick, Will.
Oh, I've learned to be quite sharp it as I've hit middle age and kept going. But unfortunately, some people are a bit more blunt. And tonight's Blunt Moron Award for making my blood pressure rise a bit comes from the great state of Tennessee and State Senator Stacey Campbell, R. Republican is the R for Regressive, again from Talking Points Memo. He tweeted, Democrats bragging about the number of mandatory sign-ups for Obamacare is like Germans bragging about the number of mandatory, and he spells mandatory with an I instead of A's, sign-ups for the train rides for Jews in the 40s.
Oh, good God, yeah. From Knoxville, Stan.
Yes, and I have known good people who've...
Campfield, his name's Campfield.
Yep, Camp Field, yes. Yes, a man of whom I commented on a blog elsewhere, I asked someone who shared the story, is it wrong for me to wish that this schmuck gets circumcised by a blind lawyer with shaking hands and a chainsaw?
It's harsh.
Simply because this is someone who, if his stupidity is genetic...
I was thinking more like an old steel... rusty shard of a beer can. That brings tetanus into play.
Oh yes. But yes, that would work as well. But here's the thing: what this person Campfield and the court majority have in common is an incredible disregard, not just for the facts, but for the feelings and opinions of their fellow Americans. Consider this. We have in the past seen people of different parties argue vehemently on the issue, but at the end of the day, by and large, for most of U.S. history, they didn't question the patriotism of others. Here we have a state senator essentially liking supporters of Obamacare to the Third Reich. I mean, I know a woman at my synagogue who survived the camps. I pray that she does not hear or read the words of the schmuck because she will rightfully be in tears. How dare Mr. Canfield? And I am honoring him by referring to him as Mr. as opposed to bleeding anal cyst, simply because I was raised to be polite. But I mean, if pride goes before fall, what's going to happen to Mr. Canfield? What's going to happen to these justices? Are they going to leave holes so deep they'll resemble the Kixilov crater that appeared 65 million years ago when the asteroid hit the planet and doomed the dinosaurs?
I wish I could buy into the whole divine justice and retribution thing and thunderbolts and lightning and, you know, just greasy spots.
In the case of Mr. Canfield,
because
a lingering death for him is simply because if he wastes away into nothingness, how could we tell the difference?
Nicely done. But the thing, I mean, it astonishes me, and I know, is Abe Foxman still around? The guy from ADL?
Last I checked, and I'm sure that Canfield is going to be hit by a bunch of people from the Jewish community, left, right, and center, and simply because this sort of language is hideous. I mean, it's an insult to everyone who literally went through the camps or even saw them. And, I mean, if he thinks he's being a tough guy by this, let me tell you a story that I came across. I believe it was at Bergen-Belsen or Buchenwald. I'd have to look. There's a story that's related in a book on the Holocaust that someone asked General Patton, who had more testicular fortitude, whatever you think of him, than Canfield will ever have, whether he wanted to enter a certain room in the camp. And Patton, for all of his bravado, said, if I did that, I don't think I'd ever be able to stop crying. Good heavens. The insensitivity of Canfield and this court is astonishing. It is as if they have decided that only they and those who agree with them are worthy of the respect of this category of human beings as citizens. I mean, this sort of attitude is even worse than what went on in the Adams-Jefferson election in 1800, simply because at the end of the day, I don't recall either one liking each other to murderers.
No.
I mean, a lot of other things. But I mean, I think we seriously have to question if the court is at the point, or will soon approach the point, where people are going to stop having any confidence in it and can choose to ignore the court because essentially much of the court's power comes by social consensus, a tradition of following it. Ever since Marbury v. Madison, which wasn't gave.
And see, all this ties in, Will, with what Dr. Bill has been working so steadily on these last couple of weeks. You know, these are we're talking about Supreme Court decisions. We're talking about statements made by politicians who arguably well represent the people they were elected to represent. We're talking about a call for a constitutional convention. And everything's in the mix, Will.
Exactly. And honestly, I would not trust the current lot of national politicians as a whole to come up with a constitution that I could abide any more than I would trust a pack of alley cats to be able to sing opera.
Well, no. It's Oh, this would just be a right. See, the reason they want to go the state route is most states are now controlled by Republican governors. For instance, the compact proposed by the Goldwater Institute is predicated upon the notion that the only delegates to this constitutional convention would be the governors of the several states.
Right,
and if everything's everything's based on a simple majority, whoop, there you go.
Yep, in which case, if they try to pass it and try to enforce it, they may end up with a civil war they have said is being waged on them. Because I don't think many people would stand to have their rights further limited. And also, it would take some time for the states to pass anything, and I think the GOP is desperately running out of time. They rather remind me, in the face of their demographic changes, of a football team trying every last play to try to stay in the one game that will keep them in running for the playoffs.
Well, I can't imagine. Well, let's put it this way. If something like a constitutional convention comes along, the Supreme Court are on the menu, too.
Yes, and they would have reason to be very afraid because in the past, conservatives have complained about activist justices. Of course, ordering a state such as Florida to stop counting votes in 2000 was judicial activism in the extreme, and we have seen precedent after precedent ignored and overturned by the Roberts Court. So if I was advising the Supreme Court, I think I would be saying that they might want to discourage this simply because it might come back to bite them. And also, if the public at large decides that this constitutional convention of states with relatively low population, public may decide, no, we're not going to follow this. In the end, governments are faith-based creations.
Look, there is room for improvement. No getting around it.
Oh, definitely.
I wander around D.C. and I'll be wandering around D.C. in fairly short order again. And so you've got people there who are basically ruled as a colony. They have a non-voting member of the House of Representatives. And they have absolutely no representation in the Senate of the United States. And the reason there are no senators from D.C. is because the odds of them electing a Republican are almost nil.
Right. I mean, it's about the same.
But on the other hand, the state of Wyoming, which has fewer people than D.C. does, has two senators.
Right.
And if you ever get a chance, and you could probably just look this up online, look at what is engraved on the south face of the Dirksen Senate office building. There's a phrase there about the Senate being the guardian of democracy. And the last time Ferg and I were walking by there, I said, boy, snap a picture of that. Why, Dad? And he does. And then I said, because that may be the most laughable, ludicrous statement in the entire District of Columbia.
No, because it was meant to be a break on democracy and rapid change. Many of the founders feared democracy.
Sure. And it was and the other thing to bear in mind is that just as is with about every compromise that resulted in the government of the United States and the Constitution, the Senate was put there to protect, at least in large part, slavery.
Exactly, because if we consider this, the attempt to try to get the Union to hold already by 1787 was difficult at best, and we had compromises such as the infamous Three-Fifths Compromises, the Second Amendment, where really militias referred to were essentially the militias of the South, which were meant to stop slave escapes, slave rebellions. And if we consider the Senate as a democratic institution, it
is really not, because when you have the state of Wyoming, which has what, less than a million people?
Let's be fair. Even though my senators are not the best in the world, especially one of them, why should a state with 1.5 or 1.75 million people, like West Virginia, have as many senators as California?
Exactly. California, which has enough of a population that if it were an independent country, would be a major player in world affairs, especially economics. I think that, I mean, one of the reasons I tend to personally prefer parliamentary democracies over our system is that they tend to be a lot more fluid, and in several countries, Israel in particular, if a party doesn't work out, oh well, it gets discarded.
Right, because there's a constant process of evolution involved.
Exactly. And
parties come
up,
they fall, they get absorbed, they opt out. It's a much more dynamic political process. By the way, Dr. John went out and did a little bit of quick research, Will, and the line that I had Ferg photograph from the south side of the Dirksen building reads, and if you need to chuckle or laugh out loud or roll on the floor or anything like that, I'll completely understand, and I'll just vamp until you get the phone back. The Senate, and it's all caps, it's carved, it's all stately and stuff. The Senate is the living symbol of our union of states. And Dr. John added as an aside, I'll be laughing for a while now.
A living symbol of the union of states? Good heavens.
I don't think I've ever heard you get so wrought. Good heavens.
If the Senate was any more divided, it would actually resemble some of the scenes from the movie Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Well, yeah, I was thinking maybe we could change it to the Senate is the living symbol of our cold Civil War.
Yes.
And by the way, you got some fan mail in from Tim from L.A., Will.
Good. Unfortunately, my internet connection went south.
Well, it turns out while I'm still connected with you, because you got to hear this, there's a follow-up to the Stacey Campfield story.
He has found out that he has an incurable disease that will allow him to shrink to the size of his moral conscience, meaning that the angels will have to try to find him with their electronic.
Well, the news is not that good. He has issued a Nixonian non-apology apology. He opens his apology as follows. There may be screaming. I'm just warning you. If you don't have a tennis ball, you can go for a tea towel or something like that.
Oh, don't worry. I've dealt with worse. Remember, I used to cover politicians locally.
Oh, sure. Once people began getting on him for sliming 6 million murdered Jews and the rest of the people who were murdered under the Nazi regime, well, it was time for Stacey Campfield to respond, and he did, and here's what he said. I regret... Wait, he's from Knoxville. We're going to need a different accent here. I regret that some people missed the point of my post. It was not to offend. It was to warn. To draw attention to Obamacare and the slippery slope that I see occurring in the lives of myself, my constituents, and the rest of the country with the continued taking of freedom by the federal government. In no way was my post meant to diminish or detract from the pain, suffering, and loss of human life that occurred during this dark time in human history. Which dark time? Instead, the post was meant to draw attention to the loss of freedom that we are currently experiencing. I stand by my steadfast opposition to Obamacare. My position and record on the sacredness of human life and protecting life speaks for itself.
300 million Americans are at risk from government bureaucrats deciding who should be given life-saving medications and who should be denied. Every citizen now faces the possibility of their tax dollars going to pay for a government-funded abortion. They're going to abort you, Will. I'm sorry.
Well, let's see. Currently, don't we have insurance companies, private entities, which are only accountable to their stockholders or owners, deciding who will receive what medical treatment?
Well, that, yeah.
Whereas a government, which at least requires insurance, but ideally has a single-payer system, can ensure that all persons have access to health care. If there's a procedure which I object to, I can decide not to take it for myself.
Well, no, I was just going to say, what I cherish out of this is the fact that Stacy Campfield of Knoxville, Tennessee, makes clear that when he compares people getting health care to people dying in death camps under the Nazis, and people object to it, it's not his fault, because he regrets that you, because you brought this story up, Will, he regrets that you missed his point.
And his point would be very well hidden by a 100-gallon hat.
Well, here in the hills, we say that Stacy Campfield is a blithet. B-L-I-V-E-T.
A blithering idiot.
No, he's a blithet, B-L-I-V-E-T. And a blithet is defined as 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag.
Well, in his case, I am torn between two wishes for Mr. Campfield. One is that if there, as I believe there is some form of existence after death, that all that is beautiful, all that is glorious, is denied for him, to him, until somewhat shortly after the sun burns its hydrogen fuel, goes through the red dwarf stage, and becomes a red giant stage, and becomes a white dwarf in about 5 billion years. The other is that it's kind of loosely based on L. Judas Kirschner. He inherited a house with 100 rooms, in each room 10 beds, and made cholera force him from bed to bed to bed.
I don't ever want to get on your bad side, Will.
Well, I'm sorry. When we have the likes of Mr. Campfield issuing such a non-apology, I honestly must say, as an attorney said in the Senate long ago,
in the state legislature in Tennessee, I'm guessing you're not representing as many people as, say, a member of the House of Representatives in D.C. represents. So we're talking about a significantly smaller number, all right?
True.
And I've mentioned this in conjunction with people like Steve King and Michelle Bachmann, but this is a little bit more doable. What in the name of George Washington are those people somewhere around Knoxville, Tennessee, who send that man to Tennessee and will reelect him this year? Let's emphasize that. He's not going to get thrown out of office. He's going to be rewarded with two more years for comparing people getting access to health care to Jews being forced into railroad cars and death camps.
Right. The only thing that will stop him is if he's found with a dead girl
or a live boy.
And they're
liable to forgive the dead girl.
Yes.
So, I mean, can we make any kind of statement, Will, about the moral, ethical character of those voters in that district who vote for him? And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm willing to bet you the elections aren't even close.
Well, I'll make a comment. If you have people who feel that they will stand behind such statements which mock and belittle the dignity of others and besmirch the memories of the dead, as well, and also the memories of those soldiers who, like General Patton, found rooms that they could not enter, I must seriously question what sort of God you might claim to believe in, what sort of moral compass you have, and in the end, must ask, would you stand for yourself being treated this way? The basic ethic of all world religions that I have studied, and many philosophies, is the golden rule. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. And yet, it seems that these simple concepts that guided the lives of people such as Thoreau, Dr. King, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, is as incomprehensible to Mr. Canfield, and I'm afraid many of his supporters, as quantum string theory would be to a termite.
I think you're spot on. Hey, Will, it's been a wonderful conversation, and I thank you very much. And I wanted to point out that Asa and Horst helped out a great deal during the course of our conversation, and we have gone we've gone from 135 to raise this evening down to 115, and from 115 down to 65. So we're getting there.
Well, let's hope that we can get all the way. And remember, in the end, democracy, as well as the horn, depends on you. The key thing is not to get upset or even laugh at the clowns out there. It's to take action, and supporting the horn, as well as supporting causes you believe in, like the ACAC or the environment, or supporting a good candidate, is a way to move forward. The key thing is not just to get frustrated, angry, or even amused. It's to act, and this is why the horn has remained on the air, and this is why people in the face of despair in Chicago, in West Virginia, and like, are pushing forward. So let's remember, in the face of such morons, let's not abandon hope. Let's do what we can to assign them to the dung heap of history where they so richly deserve a new home.
Amen. Amen, Will. Thank you very much, and have a good evening, and thanks for your patience with the connection.
Bye
now. Our good friend of long standing, Will, calling from Chicago. By the way, a little bit of happy news to put out. Darlene just wrote in a little bit ago and is putting a $100 challenge on the table in order to catch up with this evening and meet tomorrow's as well, even though I'm not going to be here. So your 5 becomes 10, thanks to Darlene. Your 10 becomes 20, thanks to Darlene. Your 20, 40. You're 40, 80, you're 50, 100, thanks to Darlene, up to $100. Thank you very, very much. It's rather important that we just keep up with what it takes to, because I got a feeling, and I can tell you this now. Go ahead and bring Devin on. Hey, Devin.
Hey, Bob.
Just real quick, I've been doing some diagnostic stuff, or Ben's been doing some diagnostic stuff, and we've been communicating during the course of the program. He thinks he's finally got it isolated. Looks like it is on the ISP on this end, and he has given me a tremendous amount of data with which to work. So we'll be on the phone after the program with them, but you know, we pay a princely ransom for this connection. And in terms of fundraising, God, I don't know what to do. It might be better if you paid us more money. I don't know what to do. Oh, and by the way, before we jump into it, Devin, a note coming in from Dr. John. Stacy Campfield, it turns out, whom we were talking about, was born and raised in Vestal, New York, just south of Binghamton in the Empire State's beautiful southern tier. Yes, Vestal. The saying goes, you know, as in Vestal Virgins. The saying goes that upstate New York towns tend to be named after figures and places from classical antiquity, Rome, Ithaca, Homer, Syracuse, or corruptions of Haudenosaunee place names, Opaqua, Geneseo, Canandaigua. Senator Campfield got in trouble last year after sponsoring Tennessee's Don't Say Gay bill. A campaign was launched to remove his pick from Vestal High School's Wall of Fame. It was unsuccessful, which is not surprising, considering Vestal. Of course, I never hear the word Vestal that I don't think of Vestal virgins, and more particularly, Vestal Goodman, longtime matriarch of the Happy Goodman family. Sorry about that, Devin. What's happening?
Yeah, you almost ruined my rage there. I have a moran, a powerful moran that I feel the need to take to the woodshed for a verbal whooping.
There's going to be whooping?
Yeah, I think there needs to be.
Bring it.
The article is John McCain, young people upset about NSA spying because we've forgotten 9/11. Now, here is the thing, Mr. McCain. I'm of that generation of young people who are upset about the NSA. And I definitely have not forgotten 9/11. Neither have most of the people that I know. And here's the thing about that. I still remember. It's burnt into my memory, and it will probably be there even when I'm old like you and have spongiform encephalitis. This will be the last memory that leaves my brain, will be the people plummeting to their deaths. I have not forgotten 9/11. I never will.
And I have to ask, though, Devin, have you forgotten the monumental screw-ups that led up to 9/11?
Well, let me go. I also remember all the wonderful lies that we were told that got us into a war in Iraq. All the false pretenses, all the yellow cake and mushroom clouds and all the other bullshit that we were sold. I remember friends of mine going to Iraq and having to make armor plating out of shit that they dug out of a junkyard. And I definitely remember the Patriot Act and total information awareness and all the other shit that you've pushed. And while you were running for president and wandering around like you have squirrels living in your brain case, I was finding out, like many people, about your past. About how you were an admiral's son who got preferential treatment in the service. And about how when you were a POW, you cracked and went to work for the other side, doing their PR things and accepted the wonderful things that they gave you, the girls and the nice house. Now, I'm not going to criticize you for that, but what I can criticize you for is then running for Senate and dumping your wife who has cancer, and oh yes, you yelling at the parents and siblings of people, of the parents and siblings of people who you were imprisoned with, who were not returned, and those parents who wanted you to help them to recover them. And you were afraid that if they were recovered, some unpleasant things may be found out about you. So you berated those people who had already been through hell. And we won't forget that either. So you need to go and change out your squirrels for some that are a little bit brighter and stick your foot in your mouth and go back to Arizona. In other words, eat shit and die. go fuck off. That's it.
That's mighty eloquent and well said. And anything else I would say in that regard, Devin, would clearly be gilding the lily. I think that may come in for some more blistering maybe tomorrow.
Oh, I have had it.
And
I saw that, and it just, you know, it's one of those things that.
Well, we're talking about a guy who yells at clouds anyway.
Well, yes.
But you don't. But that's no reason to give him a pass. And it's kind of like 60 families whose loved ones died at embassies during the 8 years of the Bush administration because he was, of course, as quiet as the damn grave.
And because he was not an embassy, it was a consulate, and the guy who went there wasn't supposed to be there and got himself killed in an episode of stupid. Because he was not supposed to be there. He was ordered not to be there.
Devin, got a roll. Thank you very much. Appreciate your patience. And we will talk soon.
All right.
All right. Bye now.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you. It is time to get out of here, right quick-like, as in like 10 seconds. Here comes Rick Smith. Sorry for all the technical problems. We'll work on it some more. Bye now.